keeping tabs of last night's gubernatorial State of the State address, the new programs, the cuts that were proposed by the governor. The Mackinac Center keeps a running count of all that. And right now, Michael's good enough to join us here on the Beckman Show again. How are you?
Outstanding, Frank. And you?
Good. Good to talk with you. We're down here at our Renaissance Center studios, and the sun is shining brightly down on the river. It looks cold out, which it is, but it's just absolutely beautiful down here.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah. The governor's address last night had new spending included. No mistake about that.
No mistake at all. We'll see how far that goes. You mentioned one of the spending initiatives on your program, in fact, raising the dropout age to 18. I don't think anybody's put pen to paper on what that would cost, but at a foundation grant of $7,000 per student, you have to wonder just how fast our surplus and new rainy day fund that apparently is going to be introduced next week will last.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying we're going to do new things in government to try to keep kids in school, to encourage education. That's very important, and I think most people would agree it's something the state government should do. But the money has to come from somewhere.
Not only does the money have to come from somewhere, you have to consider the consequences. Basically lassoing 16- to 18-year-old boys and forcing them to be in classrooms they have no desire to be in will just create disruption for other students. And that's just one of the expansions that she offered last night. You know, we've been tracking the expansions and limitations offered by administrations back to 1969. And last night, Governor Granholm set a record with 24 new proposed expansions, that being one of them, and only six limitations.
Really? It didn't seem like 24. It didn't seem like it was more than last year when she had, what, 17 or 18?
I think she had 20 last year. Her previous record was 22. And so she actually broke her own record.
And you counted 24.
We counted 24. Some of them were relatively small, such as going out and finding 10,000 more volunteers or increasing investment in some program from a previous year. We recognized that as an expansion of government and would count it as such. But, of course, there were also the much bigger ideas, and some of which you've mentioned on your show, such as a comprehensive energy package, alternative fuels, new job creation tax credits, and that sort of thing.
How does the comprehensive energy package cost more money? I thought it would create jobs and create growth in the economy to the tune of like $6 billion.
Well, we would question that because in exchange for that $6 billion worth of investment, the companies want their monopoly status back. As you know, we have more consumer choice in electricity now than we used to, although it's certainly not perfect because we have not the best transmission capacity. In fact, if the governor was going to invest in anything, she should be investing in our transmission capacity simply because we can not only import more electricity but export it. And that's when, you know, jobs and opportunity and more investment will roll into the state in that one industry.
Transmission capacity being those big electrical lines, you mean?
Yeah, the ability to bring in electricity without losing X amount over distances.
Aren't those owned by the utilities themselves?
Good question. I believe they are, but that's what I'm just saying is speculating that if a better way to energize the state, you might say, if the government is going to involve herself in these energy programs, is to find a way to increase transmission capacity.
Personally, I was hoping to hear something about encouraging the growth in nuclear power in our state.
Yeah, I have too, and I've talked to my colleague, Russ Harding, who's the former director of the Department of Environmental Quality, and when he was working for Engler, they actually went to the utilities, and they said, let's go nuclear. We will make it easy for you to find a way through all the regulations and rules and to set this up. And they said, you might, but the next administration may not be as friendly, and we don't know who that is.
And so they did not go ahead with it.
Precisely.
Although Tony Earley has been on record, he's been at the forefront of trying to encourage this country to move more toward nuclear power.
And they routinely and wisely point to France, for instance, that rely dramatically on nuclear power to get their energy.
Well, I half kiddingly mentioned this morning, or Sweden, which the governor brought up last night. They have 10 nuclear power plants in Sweden. Half their energy comes from nuclear power.
Indeed, that is another good example. Scandinavian countries are looking to nuclear power as well, and doing so in an environmentally friendly way.
Mm-hmm. Michael Lefebvre, you had to be heartened by the fact that the governor once again said, no new taxes and no increase in fees.
Well, I was, but also I recognized another moment of cognitive dissonance on their part. If she knows that raising taxes hurts job providers. Then why did she work so hard to raise them on job providers to the tune of $1.4 billion, along with consumers, just a few months ago? It seems like it would be hard for most people. I would have a hard time getting up and saying, tax increases are bad, and we just gave you one. And by the way, here's some miniature tax decreases that we're going to give to companies because we know that tax cuts create jobs. I don't think you can have it both ways.
Eliminating the gas tax for fuel purchases of ethanol and biodiesel at gas stations in the state, how big an impact?
Probably not very big, at least right now. And we viewed that, again, as picking winners and losers in the marketplace as well, betting on ethanol. You know, I've seen articles that suggest far more energy goes into producing ethanol than it does in saving energy costs as well. So it's a debate on whether or not that's an effective tool.
What should we watch for next now? What becomes crucial in sort of analyzing the budget numbers that will be put forth by the governor in another month or so?
Well, first, foremost, and last, no gimmicks. I can't imagine that they have any left up their sleeves. You know, the last two administrations have used them to balance our budgets. Real cuts need to be made, and real obvious cuts that people understand. No shifting accounts and that sort of thing, or staving off contributions to our pension funds, for instance. We need to start setting aside money to pay state workers who are preparing for their retirement. And that's a key area to look for as well.
The use of pension fund money, about $300 million of it, to invest in jobs in the state. Did you like that idea? I know it's a huge fund of over $60 billion in all, even though it's been underfunded in recent years. But is this a good idea to start tapping that money?
No, actually, Michigan history itself has shown that it's not a good idea. During the Blanchard years, they tapped this pool of revenue for venture investments, the higher risk, cutting edge stuff, and they had to reorganize their portfolio after significant losses, including one in a company that you probably remember, Vixen Motors. Vixen Motors was supposed to be the next big thing in Detroit. It was going to produce motor homes, and it didn't last very long, and it was quite an embarrassment to the Blanchard administration. But they thought that they were doing the right thing by investing this money. They thought they'd get high returns, thought they'd employ more people. It didn't work out, and I doubt this will either.
And that's what you talk about when you hear this phrase, picking winners and losers, trying to determine what company is going to succeed with that money.
Right, whether it's a company or a total industry. And again, in Michigan history, you look back to our very first governor. He looked at canals and railroads as the technology of the future, and he thought they were so important, he said, allowing the private sector to build these would be like extortion from the public, and it wouldn't be fair. And he looked to New York. He said, if New York can do it, we can do it. It turned out to be such a failure. The state legislature refused to let Mr. Mason give a farewell address, and the state of Michigan passed an amendment in 1850 to prohibit the state from investing directly in any company.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that story.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing one, and that's really the inflection point in our growth history. That's when things took off. They created a fair field and no favors, and boom, the lumber industry became the carriage industry, and the carriage industry became the automobile industry.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff. And eventually, we enjoyed all the benefits of those advances. And saw the Industrial Revolution. If you really want to carry it that far, it was the forerunner to that.
Indeed. Capitalism is a discovery process, and the discovery process has been in existence long before government set itself up to hand out favors to a particular group or industry or business. And it will continue to be, and if we just stay out of their way, they'll do better.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned our timber industry here in the state of Michigan, the long history we have. That was touched on just briefly by the governor, where she called it renewal and said we ought to offer up some of our woods for biofuels down the road, the wood chips that are used in some areas to try to create new fuel sources. And, again, we need the details on this, but how far are we willing to go to give up this resource?
Well, that, I would suggest, is the best answer. The devil is in the details. And the question also would be, are we giving up a resource? Because if you would bring in companies that have an economic incentive to harvest carefully and plant carefully so that they can continue wood chipping or whatever, then I don't think we'll be giving it up so much as we will be expanding it. We've seen this in other resources. You know, as a dramatic example, in Africa, where elephants are a commodity and you can buy and sell them, there's not a shortage of them. where there's no marketplace, where prices are allowed to act, there is a shortage of them. Same thing happens in every other market.
Fascinating stuff, Michael. We appreciate the time this morning. We'll be talking again down the road, I'm sure.
Thanks for inviting me.
Take care. Michael Lefebvre, Director of Fiscal Policy from the Mackinac Center, always with thought-provoking ideas that hopefully continue the intellectual discussion of what's happening in our state.